Welcome to the Mug Meetings Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our main topic for January's meeting featured Michael Doob talking about KVM in Linux.
Well, this is going to be really exciting because I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen with this hardware because it seems to be a little disconnected with this. But so far, so the mouse that had disappeared has kind of come back, yeah. Okay, so I guess that's a plus. Here's the idea. I thought I'd talk a little bit about using KVM for virtualization because it was sort of a topic that came up. Virtualization is an enormous topic. I mean, you can look at it at any depth, from the sort of surface depth to really getting into the really down to the guts of, especially the hardware of the system. And given my level of expertise, I'm going to sort of stay at the upper level. Okay. So let's see if we can. Well, this is going to be done with lots of keys tonight, and it will be an experiment to see how we go. Okay. Here's kind of the plan. When we're looking at the question of virtualization, there's a number of things we can look at. What I thought I'd do is give first a little bit of an overview of the situation, at least as I see it, then talk a little bit about some of the types of virtualization you can do with KVM, and I'll give you an indication why I'm using KVM in particular. And I'll try to intersperse some demos in here, too, just so you can sort of get the flavor of how it works. The demos are going to be run on the machine in my office. So that's why this can be really exciting to see what's going to happen here. But shall we go forward? Of course, the basic idea of virtualization is you want to run your own special operating system within some larger context of another system running. The IBM 640s had a virtualizer system, right? This was in the 1960s. So this is not a new concept. The idea of emulating the software one operating system within another, at least in principle, in terms of running software, is the general concept is not too bad. I mean, basically, what do you have when you have an operating system running? You have programs running, and you have a chip that has registers and things in it, and you have RAM that's full of memory that's doing something, and you have spaces on the hard disk, and you have pieces of hardware that are stuck along that you want to talk to with interrupts and so forth. If you want to have an operating system going within another one, a lot of that can just be stored and then restored as you go from one instance of the working system to another. So, for example, you can store all the registers on disk and pop them back in when you want. Or you can store all the RAM on disk, so paging RAM in and out is an old concept. And so forth. Although the challenge then becomes what happens when you have these two different operating systems that are running and they have to share hardware. So that's always a big kind of bugaboo. So, in any case, when you're looking at running one system within another, you have to have some software that runs that does the emulation of the operating system you want to do. You have to have some idea of RAM storage. You have to store the information that's on your chip. You have to store hardware access. So you try to take the current state of the machine and write it out, and then when you want to run it again, you pull it back in and you go. So at least to my mind, is sort of the general situation that you work with, and that was the situation I think in the 60s, although there are lots of, I think people who use the original IBM virtualization systems all have very gray hair now. I look around the room and I think I see a few of them. So this is really, really old stuff, but it's new stuff for Linux, right? This is virtualization in Linux sort of came around maybe 5 years ago, and it certainly got a boost with the idea of KVM, and with KVM, the K is for the kernel, of course, you have these hooks within the kernel. I think it was 2.6.26 version of the kernel that first put the hooks in, And that means that you can run a virtual machine by talking directly with the kernel, and that means you get a lot of help in terms of speed. So basically when you start looking at KVM and the type things that we'll look at tonight, there are two types of virtualizations that I like to look at. There are a number of different kind of models that you like if you have a virtualization. But for KVM, the two that typically come up are what are usually called full virtualization and para-virtualization. In a fully virtualized system, the system that's running thinks it's a running system. Okay, and it has connections to the hardware that it sees going to the hardware, and it has connections to the internet that look like they're on the internet. So, in other words, on the system that's actually hosting this, you have to have something that will handle the hardware output from the virtual system. So, for example, you'll probably need a bridge if you want to connect to the internet, because if you want to SSH back into the system, then you have to have that direct connection to the internet. With para-virtualization, that's a different type of installation, and that's one where the operating system actually knows that it's sitting within something, and it knows to give calls to that something that it's sitting within to do all these things. So, for example, if you have a para-virtualized system, very roughly speaking, you won't be able to see it from the internet without somehow going through the host system. You have to set up something that will work. So you're not directly connected in that way. So you have that type of model to work with. This chip compatibility use the KVM hooks, you have to have a CPU that has the appropriate compatibility, and you can do that by simply looking at the flags on the chip. Are we actually going to try to do this? I don't know. Whew! Yikes! God, we're going to be doing this all night, right?
Do Alt-Tab, not Tab-Alt.
Alt-Tab. Oh.
Tab-Alt does the trick.
Tab-Alt. What I wanted was the local machine, which I have. Okay. So we'll see how we do with this. So let's cat proc that CPU info and look at the flag. So what we want to look for, depending on whether you have an AMD or an Intel chip, you're looking for VMS or SVM. And one of those, you won't have it here, right? Because we're on the local machine and it doesn't have it. So there we go. Let's try to go to the other, we'll do the same thing now. Cat proc / CPU info, and we'll look at the flag. Where'd you go? I caught the typing bug from. Okay. Yeah, sorry, I'm no better. Okay, so what do we have here? We're looking for VME right here, right up at the top, okay? So, VMS. I was looking for. Sorry.
I didn't think it was VMS.
Yeah. You're right. You're right.
I didn't bring it up. Mm-hmm.
Come on, where are we?
What are those flags mean?
They're all the capabilities of the chip. I'm back on the wrong one again.
It's not VME. This one is VMX.
VMX. Here we go. Down here. That's the one, right. Okay, so that's the guy there. Oh, I see. So you can see it then. So what that means is that this thing has the capability of running this. With KVM, you also... So those are the hooks that allow you to run a virtual machine. The QEMU is what, for the most part, I'll be using for the hardware emulation. So you have a kind of package of KVM and QEMU going together. This is a Debian system, and that's typical of a Debian system. So I think we're getting better at this. So what I wanted to do, I had some notes too. So, what I thought I'd do was to indicate some of the things that are going on, but we'll get through them, don't worry. There's an enormous amount of stuff there on... these aren't even the right notes. An enormous amount of stuff there on this, and it's really pretty interesting. So what I wanted to do was to look at kind of two perspectives of looking at this. One is to look at the kind of GUI perspective, because there's some really nice ones out there. That we had some demos before with some of the Sun Virtual Tools. You remember a little while ago, worked really nicely. And we'll look at this also. There's a whole family. I think I have them on here. I'm doing great here. So if you're looking for a GUI control, there's a whole system of them that are built to work with KVM, and they have vert manager, vert install, vert viewer, vert clone, vert image. So they're a set of GUI tools. And each one allows you to do something with the system, either to set it up, or to take a peek into the system that sees what's happening, or, well, you can see that cloning is for cloning the system and installing new systems and so forth. So we'll take a look at that and see what we can do, too. We're not doing too badly here, are we? Oh, that's the right one. Okay. All right, so... Let's see.
Sorry, but did you say that KVM won't run if your chip doesn't have those flags?
Right.
Yeah. Not that it runs poorly, it just doesn't run at all.
Right. Oh, man. You want to come sit up here? I can use you. Your help. Okay. So, let's see if we can get this to run and actually see it. Oh, maybe. Hello?
Would you not provide a password?
Yes, I would.
FG.
What happened?
Well, FG to bring it back into the foreground so you can type your password in.
Yes, thank you.
Now, this is why Ubuntu should not switch away from X.
Oh, boy, was that fast. Okay.
Bravo.
So... Well, something came up, so that's a plus. All right, so what do we have here? So we have something that says localhost QEMU, and we have something that says cmstech5.math.umanitoba.ca, different machine. And so it says it knows these things are there. So let's take a look at the localhost one here. So it's not connected. So what do you think you're going to do? Connect to it, not a surprise. Typically, you have to connect to a system in order to get going. And this shows the current installations that are sitting on this machine. So there's one called Windows 7 that's shut off. That's a Mac system. No, I'm just kidding you. That's Windows 7. And then there's one called Math Desktops that's actually running now. And with all of these, you can do the things you would normally like to do. So... pause, run, shut down, clone, migrate, and open. Why don't we do open? Just to, we may run into a little problem here because of the screen resolution, but who knows? We'll see what happens. So, do you see anything? No, I don't see anything either.
Probably won't.
And we probably won't. Whoa, and we very well might. Well, look at that. So, okay, so that... That machine that's called Math Desktops is running, and now we're peeking into that system. And you can see it's not peeking in very quickly, but and even very accurately, but we should be able to do things like open a terminal. We should be able to do things like open a terminal. Okay, well, what I wanted to show you was if we run...
The virtual manager, is it running on your local machine or is it running on your mobile? It's running on your local machine.
Right? No, it's running on the other machine.
The virtual manager.
All this machine is doing is an X Windows that's looking into the machine that's running this. So the thing will at least run at full speed, but for the X to get down here,
you're servers.
So the interesting thing is what situation we're on. Oh, God. Sorry. Zero. If I keep changing letters one at a time, will I eventually get to the right one? Maybe. Okay, so can we see? Aha! We can see the internet IP address right there. Can you see that thing there? Yeah, okay. I don't know how well this shows up, but the point I wanted to make was the following. This part right... Well, sort of right there. The 131.79.25.9 is the real IP address of this machine. So, and what that tells you is that this machine, although it's running as a virtual machine under, actually that other one that was called NET185, although it's running on the other one, as far as it's concerned, it's connected to the Internet, and it is connected to the Internet. We could log on to this machine from here if we wanted to. And the reason that it can do that is because there's this bridge running that allows this submachine, the machine that's running underneath, to connect out through the bridge and then out to the Internet. Okay? So that was sort of the interesting thing there. Let me point out a couple of other things, and we'll see how this works. I'm going to click on details here, and we'll see what happens. So what this is it gives you another view, but it's all the details of what's going on. So this is overview. So that's Math Desktops is the name of the machine. It's running, which is good since we just looked at it. It's running with a hypervisor, KVM. It's the x86-64, and the emulator is KVM. And there's other stuff in here, machine settings, blah, 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 clock offsets, UTC. So that's the overview, and you can look at all performance, so obviously not very heavily used. It's nighttime. We're using two processors out of the, you know, usual stuff. I've allocated 2 gigabytes of memory to it and so forth. That should boot automatically. It's okay. It boots from the hard disk, so on and so forth. So there's this is the interesting. Yeah, you see, so this is the MAC address, and you see this. The source device is the bridge, BR0. It's not ETH0. So that's the sort of full virtualization. And so there we are. So other stuff you can do, too. So if you're looking at this on a full-size screen, and not this size screen, I mean, the thing, it looks like a regular screen. And it really works really nice. Oh, I wonder what happens if I push full screen. Maybe we shouldn't try that. Oh, of course we'll try it.
Luckily, full screen doesn't go.
Okay. And now we get out of full screen. Why? Well. Oop, had it there. In fact, I'm going to close it. Yeah. And wherever. Okay. So you see what the story is here. So the machine that this is running on is actually this guy you see at the bottom there, MDubit NET185. So NET185 is the machine that's running. Is this actual local host here. And Math Desktops is here is running. Windows 7 is shut off. Now, we also had, where did it go? Here. We have this guy, too. So this is a completely different machine. And... we can connect to that one, too, so why don't we take a look at that. We pause for a few minutes. Okay, and so you see this is a different machine. You notice it's running Xen instead of QEMU. This machine actually runs CentOS, and Xen is a sort of natural thing to use with that. And we have DOM0 is the domain of Xen. And then we have two other machines running underneath. There's a CTAN mirror, which not surprisingly is a mirror of CTAN. And there's a sort of sandbox that we have run that we call Pub Office. And you can do exactly the same thing with this. So you can pause the machine, shut it down, clone it, migrate it. Or we can do the same. You could have used the open button up top there. And, are we going to work here? And we pause. Maybe we have to... No? Well, hello. It's working. Password. Okay. So, I forgot what machine I'm on. Oh, Net 108. Okay. Let's try this. Checking.
Wait, all this is going to...
I guess that wasn't it. That looked funny.
Yeah, it was a very, very long password.
No, it's a very short password, I promise you. Okay, so... actually, I'm looking... Oh, there we go. I sort of lost my mouse here. Should we try... We'll try one more time.
Good thing skips will usually wash you out after three tries.
Oh, did you see that? That three of them went at once?
Yeah. Yeah.
So something's, I guess we're not, something's not quite working right.
Whoa.
Whoa, what's happening? Okay, so sorry guys, it looks like we're stuck there. But you can see where we're at. We're running, obviously, I have a screensaver that does what you would expect a screensaver to do. No, I think that's the right... I'll type it really slowly.
Yeah, that's weird.
Did that do it twice?
No. So much for it's a really short password.
Oh, well, all right.
Your session has now timed out.
Yeah. Whoa, all right, okay. Okay, so... So what do we have here? So eventually, I know you. When I do this on my desk, this all works instantly. You'll never believe that, but it really does. It really does. Why don't we do the? Oh God, what's this? Let's try this again. I guess I need S-bind in here. Not in the past, I suppose. Afraid to type too quickly. Yeah. So, sorry. I was going to say, look at this one, but I see this is fully virtualized too. So, so if we look at the internet address on this, it's also 130.179, which is the University of Manitoba address. But had it been virtualized, you would have had a 10.0 address. Okay. So, sorry about that. And you can...
What your problem is that's actually an SSH console to Net 108.
Right.
The machine you're on that you connected to in the virtual machine is CTAN-MIR.
Right. That's the same as Net 108,
oh,
actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually named the same console.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. So this one you have to type Control and Alt. It's interesting. You get a different sort of thing. And if you look at the details, it's the same deal. Okay. So. So it even tells you it's fully virtualized. Okay, so you get the idea. So you can go in and you can look at everything that's connected here. You can change the settings. You can run, pause, shut down, stop, and sort of all the kind of nice things you'd like to do. So,
Michael?
Yes?
What is CTAN-MIR running?
That's a CentOS.
Older version?
Desktop.
5.0.3, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a mirror of CTAN, and it does an rsync every night, and it sends me logs every day, and that's it. You know, I mean, you can see I sort of forgot my password because I never log onto that machine, and I had no idea what would come up. So, fortunately, the desktop was just plain black, and you didn't get, you know, revolving videos of my granddaughter.
What I meant to ask is, what is CMS Tech 5 running?
That's a machine on its own. That's the host machine.
Yeah, but what's...
Oh, that's CentOS. Sorry, yeah. CentOS 5.0.3.
Okay.
Then Zen support was dropped, what, 6 or 7?
5.4, I think, actually.
Six.
Support wasn't dropped. But
Support's still in 5. It's not going to be... It's not in Red Hat 6.
Okay.
And so it won't be in CentOS 6, but it's in the CentOS 5.
I thought it was on 6. I thought I installed 6. But anyways, it stopped... After
6. Oh, you know what? I think Zen is no longer the default hypervisor in like 5.4 or 5.5. Because I know when I fire up Vert Manager on CentOS 5.5, I get KVM.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not Zen.
Okay, so that's the sort of story. There's a few more things you can say about things that you can turn on and off, but I won't. But you can see you get a pretty good working system and things that you can that will run really well. Let me give you another example of instead of loading something through a virtual through this GUI, that you can also load things from the command line. So let's see if we can just go directly to KVM, and I have a I don't know where it is. I guess that's what it is. Ah, there. Okay. So let's sudo of KVM. And you can add all sorts of different, I mean, there's a whole bunch of these. For example, if you want to add more memory, the default, I think, is 512, so you can have 2 gigabytes of memory and so forth. And then we want that thing. So let's see what we can... we may have to sit around for a little while for this, so we can all go out and get an extra cup of coffee and watch and see what this does. So this is running QMU itself. Okay, so we have another round table while we wait for this to come off. Well, it's working away there.
It's actually not as bad as I would have expected.
It still is. But now they're using
the considering how many layers we're going through.
Yeah, right.
Not that bad.
Well,
not that great, but it's not that bad.
Why would you choose KVM as opposed to some other virtualizer?
Well, the thing I was interested in was using KVM because of the kernel hooks, because in principle, I think you should get pretty good... pretty good performance. The things you read about are 90% of native speed. Okay? And I don't think that's far off. I mean, I haven't done any real tests, but I don't think that's far off. It's pretty good at showing this blank screen, so...
would that be the case with other OSs than Linux? That you're virtualizing as well?
Yeah, well, this is Windows that's virtualizing here. And that's... it worked! now we wait another week, and you come back next month, the whole thing will be on the screen, I promise.
I can feel Kelly's question if I don't mind.
Oh, did Kelly? You have a question? Sorry.
Oh, I was just asking.
No.
You know that you're saying choose KVM because the performance hooks are good right in the kernel. Is that the case if you're running virtual Windows as well? The performance is still 90%.
I don't know. I haven't tested that. And in fact, we actually got something on there. look how fast it's going. Should I just kill this? Oh, were you going to say some comment to fill in this?
CPU performance? Yeah, it's like 90 to 95% efficiency.
Yeah.
I/O performance is another story altogether.
Right.
And that's where virtualization solutions fall flat on their face still.
And is that the drivers essentially that the virtualizer
it's a
provides?
Combination of things. It's not any single thing that's a problem. It's a combination of how the I/O scheduler works in the host OS, how the I/O path is implemented between the virtual environment and the host OS, what driver the virtual environment is using to talk to the virtualization environment, which talks to the what the caching policies are in the host OS and the virtual OS, what yada yada yada. Like I can create a situation under KVM where disk performance is about 75 to 80% of what I would get on bare metal. The default situation under KVM, disk performance is about 10% of what you get on bare metal.
Really?
because the default is fully synchronous writes, which basically turns off all write caching throughout the entire I/O path.
Right.
And Windows 7 boot, that slows it down to crawl. If you tell it, don't worry about data integrity, whoosh, speeds back up.
Yeah, well, that's the hardware problem again that I sort of mentioned. You have to synchronize the hardware with each system that's running in some sense or other.
It's also so. Where the parent virtualization really comes into play.
Helps, yeah.
With parent virtualization, each VM has a driver that is communicating with the hypervisor directly.
Yeah,
and in
that's
that
right.
case, the hypervisor can look at all of the VM's I/O requests and manage them and cache them as a group, whereas a full virtualization, he has to have the state of the hardware in one state and completely stop it and hand it off to the other virtual machine. A lot of overhead. And you can't really tap into what the hardware itself is caching.
I see.
Yeah.
But you don't para-virtualize Windows.
You can get, I don't know if they're technically para-virtualized, but you can get optimized drivers for the NIC and I/O
that work
under Windows. And
sure, like
they help
like
enormously for certain scenarios, and they help not at all for other scenarios. And in fact, they can actually make your performance worse under certain other scenarios. So it's still kind of a black art to optimize VMs.
What about graphics?
Yes. That is, well, obviously we can't judge here. I haven't found it too bad at work, but of course the machine's in the same room, right? So, I mean, it does have to go down to the hall and bounce back, but basically, and we don't, our net is at the moment having 500 gigabit support. So, 500 megabit support.
Okay.
It'd be great, wouldn't it? I'm trying to get to one, but, when we, he'll tell you how much we worked at that. So, okay, yeah, sure.
This is a simple question.
Sure,
Michael. When you're at the office and you start this virtual machine under KVM, how long does it take you to get to that screen?
Ten or 15 seconds.
That's
like
all.
That. Yeah, it's not long.
Thank you.
We've got a wandering mouse.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So. Well, I was hoping to get out of here.
Do Control Alt and then Alt Space.
Control Alt and then Alt Space.
Alt Space now. And then down to close with the arrow keys.
Alt F4. I guess that would have worked.
Probably.
Yeah, okay. So hopefully this is all going to disappear.
Question?
Yes. Please, save me.
Yes. How about performance for 3D graphics acceleration for video games and Windows?
Oh, my God. It would be terrible, right? I can't imagine that.
Is there anything that will ever make that better?
Yes. If you run VMware Workstation, they can virtualize DirectX and OpenGL.
Just VMware Workstation.
At the moment. I don't think VirtualBox can do it.
VMware, that's not open source, right? That
would cost
money and it's proprietary.
But you can get VMware Workstation for Linux.
Does VMware Player support the 3D? It doesn't. I don't think so.
And I think
so you would need to pay for Workstation.
Okay.
That's the only one that does.
But that would generally do it on any system then?
Well, Windows and Linux hosts only.
Okay.
Local display only. You can't remote it.
Right.
So there's limitations, but yeah, it does support 3D virtualization.
So you can do it with the Mac OS as well.
Oh, right, VMware Fusion, right.
Yeah.
Forgot about that one.
Thanks.
Okay, so here's another command line demo that we'll give a try with.
You've got an extra space in there.
Oh, where?
Dash space boot.
Oh, thank you. So... This says we're going, sudo's obvious, KVM, we're going to boot off a CD-ROM, but the CD-ROM is defined as this particular file that happens to be sitting on the machine. The dash boot D means boot off the hard disk. So you can also have a dash boot C, which would mean,
D is the CD-ROM, isn't it?
CD-ROM, yeah. Sorry, D...
Oh.
D is to boot off the CD-ROM. C is to boot off the hard disk.
Right. The old DOS.
Yeah, exactly. Right. C and D. Right. Okay, so let's give this a shot. The point is that what we're okay. Well, let's see what we do. Yeah. Well, this should be faster because you're just reading an ISO off the machine, but we do have to get it all down here. So we wait for stuff to come down here. Okay. So something's happening. ISO Linux. So. As you might guess, this is a SquashFS kind of thing. And basically what we're doing is booting a CD-ROM, except I use this virtual image for it, and it boots up really quickly.
Because it's launching in graphical mode.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. So, that wasn't terrible. Let's see if we can actually boot this thing. Uh-oh. What was that?
It has to clear the screen.
Yeah. So what are we doing here? So we're running an ISO under QAMU, and an ISO could be anything. It could be an installation disk, and typically it is an installation disk, actually. That's the normal use of this. But I chose to pick something that wasn't an installation disk, something that would run so you could actually see something happen. This is the standard system rescue CD disk and usual Linux startup. Yeah. Of course, you won't believe me if I say this usually just flies by the screen. I don't read any of this. But all right. So that's really interesting. I had no idea that it was saying all of these things.
Had you chosen the kernel boot option to force it into text mode, this would be flying past.
Okay, we've gotten down to the keyboard, so that's at least something.
Although it looks like text mode, it's not actually a text video mode.
Yeah, is that right?
Every line changes.
It's a frame buffer video mode. Uh-huh. So it's resending an entire screenshot every half second.
Yeah. It's not scrolling.
Sounds like we're mounting the proc. We're getting there, guys. We're pretty close. We got sys and proc. Dev? Okay.
That's there's lots of conversation going on about the.
You didn't have to give it a hard disk image or anything before you had cable.
This was an ISO file, so essentially it was a hard disk image. Right? I mean, it was the image.
But now it's basically a diskless OS.
It's a rescue CD. Well, the idea was, you know, with a rescue CD, that boots instantly, right? So this would be... okay.
The booting is instantly.
Yeah, that's right. It does boot instantly. It's just we're waiting here for...
So the question, did you see it? Sorry, Michael. Did you create a machine? You got a machine that then you pointed to the ISO image for boot.
Yeah. No, I didn't create a machine. There's KVM is running. It's loads the ISO file as the equivalent of a hard disk, and it runs that. So it's as if you're installing something from an ISO. So you don't have an actual machine running. Presumably this runs in RAM. It's got to run in RAM, right? This doesn't use the hard disk. So
what does KVM do? How much memory does that have? Is that the vault memory set up?
I think it's 512. I think it's a half a gig is the default.
You can't.
I did in one of the earlier ones because I was afraid we'd run out of memory.
But the Windows one. Because Windows running has no disk associated with it, obviously.
No. I mean,
you haven't defined it.
That's right.
There's no config file here.
So that's right. Yeah, you did. Well, yeah. Not that I know of.
No, it's running defaults. It's running defaults.
So. We see what happens with Wizard. Will I regret that?
Yes.
I will. Maybe I will.
Actually, it won't be any worse than this.
That's true.
So while we're waiting for that, when you type in KVM and QMU shows up, are these two different programs?
Yeah. They are. That's a good question, and I wish I could tell you more about that. When you run KVM, you can on an Ubuntu system, it will call QEMU. So those two are linked together. That's not true under CentOS, and I'm not sure exactly what the... Does that look as bad there? Oh, yeah, so it does. Okay.
Just wait.
Oh, just wait? Okay.
It'll fix itself.
So,
5 minutes.
Yes, I... So I guess we can... So I guess there are probably others here who can answer that question better than I can. But the KVM are the links in the kernel that makes it run. The QEMU does the emulation that actually emulates the operating system.
And is that because it's full virtualization as opposed to para virtualization?
Well, I think that's a little different situation. I think you would run that in either case, but it's the way you built. Yeah, that's different from what we have here.
So you're saying KVM provides kernel hooks and QEMU runs a machine on top.
Emulation, yes. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Anyone have anything else to say?
Well, QEMU can run LS even if your Linux kernel doesn't have KVM capability and your chip does not have virtualization capability. When it showed you the CPU info information,
I guess
QEMU
really slow,
can do full emulation only in software and it's painfully slow.
Yeah.
But
this QEM here, my understanding is that the QEM that KVM is using has been modified to actually work with KVM, and it's not really the same QEMU that you would get, if you installed QEMU.
There is a KQEM,
that's right.
KQEMU.
That's basically what you're running.
That's the one with the KVM hooks on it, as I understand it.
Separate thing. You can get a KQEMU module that's separate from the built-in stuff. But QEMU by default now will use KVM if it's available on the kernel you're running it on, rather than its own. But if you are running some crazy-ass kernel and you don't want to actually run KVM for whatever reason, KQEMU is a separate module that was developed before KVM, and it will do similar things. But it does it in a module rather than usually built-in.
I think. In technical terms, QEMU is not a hypervisor. Never has been, never will be. So each virtual machine in pure QEMU is just a user land process emulating the CPU, emulating the BIOS, emulating everything in software. KVM is the hypervisor. KQEMU is another hypervisor that has largely been superseded by KVM that allows the QEMU tools, utilities, BIOS replacement, all the code to emulate, how do you emulate a hard disk, allows it to all run at basically hardware speed.
For our curiosity, since you didn't actually specify a system, what does LSPCI show in this image as the hardware byte that you get by default?
LSPCI.
Oh.
Hey, I got one of those at home.
Not a disk in sight.
No, well, there isn't one, right? Yeah, but this is meant to run in memory, right? I mean, it's a REST.
This is a hardware.
Yeah.
That's the default hardware, yes.
Motherboard.
That's what's provided by QEMU.
Or,
Cirrus Logic.
Yes, basically.
Okay, so maybe we can just kill this.
That's the point.
Yes. Okay. All right. So. Okay. So there was another thing that. As you can see, you can use KVM from the command line. You can. This is things that are brought up from the when you define your own CD-ROM. If you have something in the CD-ROM, then you should be able to just boot it directly, and it'll go to the disk. Actually, I was trying this out at work today, and I may have left something in there. Well, maybe I shouldn't try that. Well, maybe I should. We'll put 10 seconds into this, and if
time check.
Yeah, and if it completely dies, we'll forget about it. So okay, so there's one. While that decides whether it's working or not, there is one other thing that I want to mention tonight, and that is using the.
It's interesting because that's part of the BIOS initialization.
No bootable. Well, okay, that answers that. Okay, so I guess I didn't. So let's get out of this. Okay, yeah. All right, so there is another command line tool which is, do this kind of quickly, which is related to the virtual manager that I showed you before, and that's VIRSH. VIRSH has loads of commands. In fact, did I lose my mouse here? Just trying to get back to the talk.
Hold down Alt and press Tab.
Yes, did. Alright, okay. So, I did want to mention VIRSH, the virtual shell, because there are loads of things you can do that. It's really a nice piece of software. VIRSH works with this combination of KVM and QEMU. If you're using Xen, like we saw in CMS Tech 5, there's a similar program called XAM, which can be used to control the system. And the point with this VIRSH is you can get information about your system, you can start up, shut down, do saves and restores, and dumps and creates. The dumps and creates is a kind of interesting thing. So let's see if we can... there we go, back. So, I think if we do a help, we'll get... No, that was... I don't have my... Okay, forget that. You can see all the commands that start with S-E-T and on the way down from that. I seem to have lost the ability to scroll. So the nice thing with VIRSH is that you can control lots of things. So... did I do something wrong? So this is the thing we were running. That math desktops was the thing we logged into and looked at the picture. That's listing all your running processes. If you want to look at all of them, then you remember when we were looking on the connect to the local CMU, we had one running machine and one not running machine. So one of the nice things is that actually you can run this as a shell too, like that. So there's a nice command called dump XML, and you can take a machine that's running. We had math desktops there, right? And maybe we'll run this through more so we can see what actually comes out. Unexpected data. Sorry, we can't do that. Okay, we'll do it. Should have done it. Oh, God, I can't roll back up. Okay, you can see the end of the XML file, and you can see what it does. Actually, if we...
do you have page up and page down keys?
Yeah, but I'm not sure those are working either. So.
Shift page up.
Oh, shift page up. Oh, excellent. All right. Okay, so, and does page down work too? So you can see what the if I had a mouse we could see if I had a pointer we could see I could point to the screen here, and you can see what's happening. You just have a description of what's there. So the name, the UUID, the amount of memory that's allocated, current memory being used, two CPUs. Oh, let's have a
trigger.
Ah, yeah. Okay. So the OS type of architecture, all the things he's... Oh, the feature stuff, that's the good stuff here. So let's go... I think we went down too far. features.
Yeah.
ACPI, APIC, end of features, clock, offset is UTC, even though it gives the right time. On power off, destroy, on reboot, restart, on crash, restart, devices, the emulators, KVM, the file type is disk, and so on and so forth, right? So this is including the MAC address of the internal thing and the fact that we'd set up this bridge for the interface, right? And BR0 is now the interface instead of ETH0. So so all of this is built in, and so you can do this XML dump. Right. So you can do this dump XML. So you can get an XML dump by doing dump XML. And there's a complementary command create. So that will create a new system using that XML file. And you can go in and obviously edit the XML file. So if I wanted to double the memory, you double the memory. And you want to change the name, you change the name, and so forth. So it allows you to really play with the system. It's really a nice thing. Save and restore is a similar thing. You can save a copy of the system and restore it. Start and shut down, obviously. You can start systems and shut them down just as you could from the thing, the listing we looked at. There's a whole host of things you can do. It's a really nice interface. I haven't tried all of them, but all the ones I've tried seem to have worked fine. So it means if you want to get in there and really create several systems and have them work, then that's really a fairly easy thing to do. Okay, QM. Yeah. Okay, I think I'll stop there because that sort of gives you the overview and. There we go. Is that the right time? Oh, that's good. I'm actually over, am I? My apologies. It's all because of the slow internet connection. It would have been done right on time if we had had a good connection.
So it installs init scripts, and we'll start the guests when the host reboots and stuff like that.
When the which?
When the host reboots, the guests will
automatically start. Well, you can set that to auto-start or not. And normally, if it's something like a mirror, you want it to auto-start. In fact, that does. But that's something that's settable. Actually, that's in that list, the XML list, is auto-start. Oh, you noticed that? Yeah, exactly.
Can you manage the properties of the host? Is there a GUI tool to do that part of it as well? Like you showed us how you could manage all the properties of the other machines, but, I don't know, setting stuff like only use a certain amount of RAM from the host or only a certain amount
that is settable, yeah. That's in that whole list of things that you could set. That was you can set it both from the XML file, and you can also set it from that GUI interface. You can say, cut down the memory.
For the host as opposed to the guests.
You mean the hypervisor?
Can you go in there and say, you know, make 4 of the 8 gigs of RAM in this machine available for any guests?
For any guest.
VMware can do that.
Yeah.
Zen allows you to do that. KVM is just like a module on your system. So
right, yeah. So I don't know what would control that, actually.
You can't control. I don't think you can partition the host.
Not
really a hypervisor.
Not that I know of.
In a strict sense, is it?
Well, the KVM is a set of tools to use, right?
You aren't really creating a hypervisor in a strict sense because.
Right. So the Proxmox that you were talking about, I guess, runs on bare metal, right? And
yeah, but it's similar to the.
No. Okay.
Short answer would be no, just don't fire up guests that use more than that amount of memory.
Yeah.
The trickier part would be if you wanted to throttle how much processor you
have. Prioritization.
That's why VMware costs money.
Yeah.
you can do it with QEMU.
Really?
Yeah.
The application layer, and it's effectively a fancy bash script to take a look at the CPU usage and limit and change the nice value every X amount of seconds. And it's not a bash script, it's a C++ application. It uses nice timers, but it's effectively that.
Okay.
And you can set a specific program, and this is arbitrary on Linux, and I've used it for QEMU specifically, but you can set this application only gets this much CPU usage ever.
It's a hack.
It's ugly, and it itself takes a fair bit of CPU usage.
Mm-hmm.
But it works.
That's why you take it to 12 Coronatron so you can have
disappear.
Yeah, right.
Support. I'll figure out what
that's. It's actually no.
I don't think. Yeah, you can only run it on one core.
Yes, but there is. What they did is basically the Byte compiler is a hack out that's a modified QEMU. And QEMU by itself, it actually runs one byte compiler on the logical processor, and that's why you can emulate as many cores as you want, but it actually will only use one. But there's a hack out to actually implement, say, like, X number of byte compilers, and then on top of that, spread it out. And so there is a hack out there to make it work. I've used it. It does work. It's not pretty.
See, that sounds like a hack.
Well, at that point, you once again say, well, use VirtualBox or VMware, yeah. All of VMware's basic products are free, by the way. It's only when you get into the advanced products that they
so
start charging.
Management consoles.
Well,
I mean the fancy management. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's almost like a freemium type model now.
Yeah.
Your basic software is free, and if you want to do more than it can do, well, then cough up.
Yeah. But you have to have a Windows machine to control all of this,
that
right?
Too.
That is probably its single biggest limitation.
Yeah, that sucks.
You need one Windows
machine. Actually, that torpedoed my use of that on there.
It can be a virtual machine.
Yes, it can. And
yes,
I've done
I
that.
Suppose.
The problem is you need a Windows machine to bootstrap the virtual machine.
That's right.
I just think an administration of VMware isn't much more efficient than this, is it?
It can be. If you're more GUI oriented than command line oriented, then VMware provides a very rich management experience.
That's what I mean. It's all about management, though. But I mean, as far as actual out and out performance, if I need to run guests in isolation, am I really getting anything speed wise from VMware that I'm going to get from KVM?
Yes,
KVM?
You are actually. Not by much. Yeah. If it's CPU performance you're talking about, no. We're talking about, like, you know, like 1 or 2 or 3 percentage points of the base hardware. I.O. performance, there can be substantial improvements. Can be, not will be. The biggest thing virtual VMware supports right now that no one else does yet is I.O. virtualization. Not just paravirtualizing the I.O. adapter, but the PCI technology called IOV, where you can actually assign PCI resources from the host to a guest. So you could dedicate an actual hardware RAID controller to a guest, for example.
Cut out overhead. Cool.
Yeah.
But you have to have hardware that supports it, which translates to brand new and expensive. And, of course, there's limitations because, you know, you can only cram so many RAID controllers into a single host, and how are you planning to hook up that much disk, and so on and so forth.
As your level of infrastructure that you have goes up, then VMware becomes useful.
Yeah.
Well, one other comment about that is it took me a long time to get my head around the performance loss in this, but the fact of the matter is cores are getting cheaper and cheaper, and it's hard to buy cheap server-grade material anyway without a lot of cores in it. We sit around doing much of nothing, and what this really offers that I love is you have isolation of the OSs, and you can cookie cutter these things out, put services on them that are questionable
security
and completely isolated from each other, so you can service a lot of requests for weird stuff and not have client A wrecking client B. Yep. And the isolation is worth every penny of the overhead in that respect, because you don't have to fix as much crap. It doesn't break.
But you're still subject to the same security problems as
Client A can have a serious security problem, but it's not going to affect Client B at all. And Client A can crash that machine as much as it wants.
Yeah.
Client B is going to get good at that.
Really good value of flexibility to deploy a VMware
in practice so far.
It's not cheap, but it's worth it.
There's actually another benefit that I found for Windows administrators to use virtualization, not so much with Linux. Linux, you want to upgrade your hardware, take the hard disk out of the old machine, you put it in the new machine, you reboot, right? Anybody tried to upgrade the hardware on a running production Windows server?
Yeah.
Well, when it's a VM,
it's awesome.
You just shut it down, copy the VM onto the new host, start it up.
Disaster recovery.
And it's also a huge benefit for DR. Because you can take a snapshot of the whole VM, copy it off to your cold site. Mm-hmm. If, you know, the unthinkable happens. Well, obviously it wasn't unthinkable because we prepared for it. But, you know, if the hoped not for to ever happen happens, you just wander over to your cold server and turn up all your VMs.
Yeah.
I know of a few companies that have production systems that are 100% virtualized. Then they've got, like, you know, 8 hosts with stupid amounts of RAM and crazy sans. 30 hosts running their production system. But then for the backup system, they run the whole thing on 3.
Yep.
So you didn't have to spend 1 for 1 to get a hot spare, or warm spare, I guess. So yeah, for there can be advantages depending on what you're trying to do.
What was the migrate option in one of those tools? Did you try that?
No.
Supposed to work.
Migrating from Xen or from VMware?
No, it migrates from one KVM host to another KVM host. Yeah.
Is that doing it live? Or?
Snapshots it, moves it, resumes it.
Just be careful, though. If you actually tell it to let it do it itself, it'll actually move your production servers without you even knowing it.
Yeah.
Well, it works great, but you know, I don't want my actual production box database server going over someplace else just because it thinks it should go there.
Yeah.
So. One other question. Does KVM have a virtual to real conversion where you can take a virtualized system and say, okay, now I want to roll this out and I want to put it on real hardware now because it just isn't going to perform well enough?
Yeah, not, you're using does images.
That,
you're
does
using,
that, will that?
You're using virtualized hard disk images. Therefore, you can always make it so that you can you can bootstrap that to a disk. If you know what you're doing, you can format it correctly and use DD.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't done it, but you can do it,
just
especially if you use a raw disk.
Yeah.
And in the case of Windows, you can now, like Windows, the latest version, support booting from disk image files. There's a new boot manager in Windows 7, and you can boot from a disk image that you created.
But isn't the problem always, though, the hardware abstraction layer and doing all that kind of shit? So, the Linux has been much easier, but images are not.
Although, I've had to do this, I ran into that exact problem. Virtualized machine didn't give me enough I/O performance. The solution wasn't run it on bare metal. The solution was continue to run it in a VM, but that was the only thing running on that machine.
Oh, yeah.
So basically it had 100%, well, okay, it had 97% of the performance of the machine available to it.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, the hardware performance hit, in some cases, is the switching between the various virtual machines. If you're not switching, then you do get back some of the performance. One thing I was mentioning, what I run at home on my virtual machine, a server, I have a server that I run this, it's a system called Proxmox, P-R-O-X-M-O-X. And it's quite nice because it's a sort of a hard metal, it's a bare metal VM server, and it supports OpenVZ, which is a power up virtualization. So if you want to run multiple Linux images, runs on the same kernel, but the Linux images, are great, so you get nice isolation, and the overhead is like 2 or 3%, so it runs very efficiently. And you can run KVM on it, and it's all managed via a web interface, so it works relatively nice. And I run KVM and
I've heard good things about that, and in fact, I might have used it, except I didn't see an easy way to
have
a pair of RAID 1 disks
and
then
improved,
install
it.
Yeah.
Else. But it's quite a nice system.
Yeah.
Installs easy.
Yeah, definitely.
Looping these is kind of like a FreeBSD jail.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do any of these virtual machines just let you use a hard disk partition instead of even having an image file?
You can. There's a number of ways. These are actually, obviously, were set up as image files, but you don't have to do that.
So which virtual machines allow you to do this? All of them?
Pretty much all.
Box won't.
What?
Okay,
well. BOCHS. Well, QEMU is phased off. For QEMU, you will. Yes. Okay. Because that can be really handy for installing a new distro of Linux on another partition.
Yeah, you definitely, yeah.
Actually, that's the way I did my last one.
Yeah.
Just installing Gentoo even would be a lot nicer on there.
Although you also might want to look into user mode Linux if you're just doing a different partition. Why do full virtualization if you can use a small little application layer? If you're going to put it on a separate partition, I guess.
Okay. Well, all right.
Since it's about 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meeting summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website. You can find it at mugg.mb.ca.